This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello and welcome to the ILTA podcast, Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto, how internal chatbots can save time and increase productivity. My name is Jack Racinto and I'm a member of ILTA's content coordinating team. With us today is Mark Giroux, fellow ILTAN and director of Fenwick Labs for Fenwick & West LLP. In this episode, we will be discussing Fenny, the knowledge bot Mark has developed and created for his firm, and diving deeper into the costs and benefits that come along with implementing chatbots. Hello, Mark, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, Jack. It's my pleasure.
We really appreciate you taking the time out to go over your experience with chatbots, as this is a new innovation for a lot of firms and for a lot of companies as well. So could you please explain to us exactly what a chatbot is and how it's used?
Well, chatbots have been around for several years. So if you've gone to a support site from your cable provider or maybe Amazon or stores, you probably experienced a chatbot where you type in and it responds, and there may or may not be a human in the mix. More recently, vendors such as Google, Microsoft, and Amazon have made chatbot platforms available. And so we've taken advantage of that to deliver what I call a knowledge bot, which goes beyond the typical static question and answer to surface data from accounting, CRM, HR, and other systems. So for example, our chatbot can tap into Aderant Accounting, Salesforce CRM, and our Workday HR system, our intranet, LexisNexis databases, and much more.
So you've taken it a little bit further from just kind of the type response to also the natural language processing with voice commands as well.
Yes. So we, after reviewing, and there are some great platforms out there from several vendors. A couple of years ago, we surveyed what was available, went with Google's Dialogflow platform, and that is back-ended by Google's natural language processing and allows it to respond either to voice or to text.
Wow, that's terrific. So taking that in mind and moving forward into that, looking into those platforms and things like that, if a firm wanted to actually implement their chatbot, what kind of investment would they be expecting to make with regards to kind of training the bot, some of the development time that goes into it, focus groups with their users, things like that? What kind of experience have you had with the cost that it took to implement this chatbot, or this knowledge bot, I should say?
Sure. So I can describe our experience, but before I do that, I want to say broadly, it depends. So for example, you know, a corollary is I can install a database like SQL Server or Access or MySQL in 20 minutes and spend the rest of my career coming up with ways to use it. So the same is true with chatbots. So if firms want to get in and sort of test the waters, there are a number of platforms where they could get something up and running literally in hours or days. Now, having said that, plugging into all the resources that we want to plug into the workflows, it really has become a platform for us. So for us specifically, once we had surveyed the market, we selected a platform, we did an initial pilot for our pro bono group in a couple of months. And again, a lot of that was not the chatbot platform per se, but integrating it with our internal resources. So for example, somebody could ask when the next pro bono event was occurring, and that would query our intranet, our SharePoint intranet for that information. So there's a lot of underlying infrastructure. So once we delivered that prototype, we had proved the concept, We pitched it to the firm leadership. They were very excited about it. We went back and we productionalized it and probably took about 4 developer months. And I'm using that metric because it was not a full-time effort. We had other things going on. And once we had the platform in place, really the bigger part of it is developing and surfacing the content. So that is hard to quantify because we went out to the practice groups, out to the departments, interviewed the managers and leadership and said, what content is relevant to you? We also surveyed our existing intranet for FAQs and other content. So it's sort of an organic process, and I think a firm can make it as limited or expansive as they wish to. You know, cost of entry is low, very low, but if it's something that you want to invest in as a major platform, then the cost can go up significantly.
That makes perfect sense. And thinking about it in that capacity, you know, deciding how you want to use it, as you said, in a limited or an expanded capacity, it's a living project and something that's going to evolve and develop over time, and you just have to have a good roadmap for where you want to go with it.
Absolutely.
So you've been running Fenny for over a year now. How has user acceptance changed since the initial implementation?
Sure. So we had 2 launches. Beginning of 2018, we launched to staff, and mid-2018, we launched firm-wide. And we started with staff, sort of treating staff as a beta group, because once we launched to our busy legal professionals, we wanted to make sure everything was baked. And in both instances, when it's first made available, you know, there's a lot of tire kicking and it's novel and people are kind of following the script. So we did a lot of communication. In fact, every few weeks we would send out first to staff and then firm-wide, hey, here are 10 more things you can do with Fenny. And of course, people would say, oh, I'll try that. And they type that in. And it's almost by rote. What we've seen as people have internalized and incorporated Fenny into their daily work, a much broader range of questions. Some of them are, you know, kind of amusing, but others are really insightful. And what's apparent to me is people are using Fenny in a much more natural way. And that's really exciting. It does put a burden on us to keep up, because while the natural language processing AI does a pretty good job of detecting variances in phrasing of questions, there's still ongoing training. So for example, if I say, what is the meaning of voir dire? And Fenny goes out to the Lexis legal glossaries and returns something for me, that's great. If somebody else says, hey, Fenny, I need to know what voir dire means, that may be too big of a difference without additional training. So we track that on a daily basis, and we're adding new sort of phrasing templates to the AI, and that's an important part of the training. So again, initially it's very rote, it's kind of, gee whiz, this is something new, that's amusing. What we're seeing is people now are just assuming they can ask Fenny almost anything, and so the challenge is for us to keep up with that.
That's really interesting, seeing how when you first implemented, people were more of the rule followers and didn't push the envelope too far with it. But now as they've gotten more comfortable with it, they seem to be interacting in it more organic fashion, just kind of asking it whatever comes to their mind or phrasing things as they would in a natural conversation, as opposed to actually coming up with just commands directly.
Exactly.
So what kind of support do you and your team provide to further develop FENI with regard to working with departments, doing additional training with it, and gaining feedback to kind of gear it more towards working better in your environment?
Sure. Great question. And I would say there are two really important interrelated but separate areas of support. One is the more traditional IT application development technology support. So for example, we are working right now to upgrade the underlying code base for version 2. So Google has released a new version. We initially developed for version 1, and in the fall, they're going to deprecate version 1. So we're getting ready for that. So that's kind of the traditional folks in IT know that relentless march as vendors release new versions, we need to keep up with that. But perhaps even more important is a daily organic process, I would say, where we review the logs every day for failed questions or new questions or questions that need training. And that's a subset of my team, 4 people. We spend maybe 15, 20, at most 30 minutes, depending on the activity, reviewing the logs, identifying new questions that we want to add to our backlog to implement, questions where somebody asked something in a different way. So for example, the example I gave earlier about the Lexis glossary question, and so requiring some new training. And then the third bucket is, well, no one's ever going to ask that again. It's probably not generally useful, and we just let that go. But it's that review process that then leads to conversations across the firm. So, for example, we had a manager the other day that said, where can I find a list of approved vendors? And that we didn't have the answer to that question. I spoke to somebody in finance. We actually have a manager of vendor relations in finance. And the simple answer was talk to this individual. So that will result in a new response from FENI to speak to this individual when somebody has a question about a vendor. So again, daily process. Not too heavy, but it's an ongoing process. That's the content curation. And then episodic projects related to this, to the platform. So upgrading to V2, we recently released email support. So instead of talking to a chatbot, I can email the chatbot and get a response via email. And we're also looking at integrating with Microsoft Teams. That's one of our next big initiatives.
That's a perfect segue into my next question, which is, what advancements have you made since you've implemented FENI? I note that you just mentioned how you're allowed to now email FENI, and then FENI will respond back to you in email. But what other kind of advancements have you made since then?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And thousands of little ones. I mean, in a sense, you could say every new answer or workflow that FENI can present to a seeker is an enhancement. So there's a lot of knowledge-based enhancements. I mentioned connecting to LexisNexis. That's something we turned on a couple of months ago. Actually, the hardest part was negotiating with the vendor because they hadn't had anyone ask them to do that. So they needed to figure out what the appropriate licensing was for that. Once we had that, they provided the information in either JSON or XML format, easy for us to work with. So the email one we launched about 3 weeks ago, and we all know that our attorneys love their email. And so one of our goals with FENI is to surface it wherever our people want to be. So there's that. We recently have pivoted from more query response type of content where somebody asks a question and we go to one of our systems to more workflow related. In other words, it's nice if Fenny can give me an answer to a question. It's even better if Fenny can do work for me. So one example of this, and most chatbot technology can be conversational. In other words, it's not just, I ask a question, I get a response back. That's the end of it. So now I can ask Fenny to help me fill in my transportation reimbursement form. So in our various offices, there are different types of mass transit, and once a month I can submit that for reimbursement. And Fenny can ask five or six questions. What services did you use? What month are you submitting for? How much did you spend? And I guess that's three. And Fenny will actually fill in the information for me, send me an email. All I need to do now is attach my receipts, and I can forward it on to our benefits department, and it will get processed. Before that, I had to go find a form on the internet, print it out, sign it, and copy my receipts and either enter office it back or, even more work, rescan it and send it back to benefits. So those are the kinds of workflows that we're focusing on across the firm to really sort of chip away at the time. So how we measure success is if we can take a 1 minute process and turn it into a 10 second process, that's a win. So we and many take much longer than that. But the point is, for us, it's chipping away at that wasted time throughout the day and giving people back that time so they can use it productively for the attorneys, for our clients.
That's a great answer. You know, it reminds me when I was a kid in the early 90s, we were building computers and Sound Blaster had come out with a new board. And one of the ways that they were showcasing their speech on there was they created a program called Dr. Spatzo. And basically it was kind of a psychology program where you would type in a question and or type in an answer about something and it would give canned responses based on there. It's just amazing to see how that's evolved over that time period to now, to where rather than just giving you some canned answers, it can actually go and conduct workflows and actually help you in the processes that you do now.
Absolutely.
So you had mentioned earlier knowledge curation. Has Fenny actually shed any light on knowledge curation in processes previous to the implementation, such as uncovering stale data and deadwood and things like that?
It certainly has. And that's one thing that became apparent to me very early is the quality of content. I mean, we all know the adage, garbage in, garbage out. It applies to everything we do, and it always has as technology professionals. But a knowledge bot, because it's such a transactional experience, you know, a transactional relationship between the seeker and the system, it shines a bright spotlight on any content that is stale or incorrect. So we really pounce on anything that we see that needs to be updated. Now, it always needed to be updated, but the way I like to describe it is, imagine a page on your intranet. You've got 20, 30, 50, 100 pieces of data, links, little bits of information. When somebody goes there, you don't actually know what they were looking for, which of those 50 pieces of information they were looking for, unless they click on it and you have some kind of click tracking. But if you don't, you have no feedback as to whether they actually got what specifically what they were looking for. So I'm a new associate. I go to the associate page. What I really needed was an NDA template for a matter I'm working on. In the old days, you threw a bunch of stuff there. You knew that associates were going to that page, but you didn't really know specifically what they wanted. And so if the NDA was stale, well, I don't know unless somebody tells me. And the associate clicks on it, either she uses it, which is the worst case scenario, or without knowing that it's stale, or she finds that it's stale, but she's too busy to let anyone know. So she sends out an email to the entire practice group. Somebody responds back, and that's what she uses. With a knowledge bot, you have a log that somebody clicked on that thing. So you now know how many people specifically are asking for that NDA. And it becomes very apparent that that's a high demand piece of content. Now, one of the things that we do is we provide a lot of channels for people to respond back. So for example, right in the knowledge bot, they can give a thumbs down or a thumbs up on the answer that they've received. They can also, of course, email us or email the CAM group if they're the ones that curate that piece of content. But either way, we have a record of who's accessing which or attempting to access which specific piece of content from which practice group, what their job title is. So I know that's a sort of rambling discussion, but the point is the granularity of tracking gives us this really good map of where we should be spending our time curating content. And that's a big part of what we do. We also have designated experts for every piece of content in the knowledge base. So on a quarterly basis, we ask them to review any new or changed content. And what we hope to accomplish, and it's a very human process still, is to elevate the quality of the content through more rigorous and regular curation.
It sounds like that's a huge added benefit to actually using Fenny, is just getting those metrics and having those report details available for the kind of data usage that's going on in the system and what kind of forms are being accessed and things like that. I think having some of that business intelligence just in your own system is really a great benefit to using this.
It absolutely is. And we now have hundreds of thousands of rows, maybe over a million, I haven't checked, in terms of interactions. And one of the next things, going back to an earlier question, is we're actually going to apply some machine learning techniques to begin to analyze that data, sort of the way, you know, Google or Facebook are analyzing their data. But now that we have a volume of data, we can start to look at what are the most trafficked information flows and how can we optimize those? Because one of the perhaps counterintuitive things about having a knowledge bot and capturing this kind of granular data about who needs what from whom is we can highlight inefficient processes. In fact, the ideal outcome is through the use of Fenny and the knowledge bot, we actually eliminate its need by re-engineering high-value, high-traffic processes so the seeker doesn't actually have the question in the first place. And that we're just starting to sort of focus in on that now that we've got enough data. But that is the ultimate win, which is to get the information needed to re-engineer processes, simplify them for the end users, and then we can move on to new questions and workflows that haven't been re-engineered yet.
That's really a terrific way to bend that data and use it to your advantage. I think that's a really great roadmap for expanding your knowledge and usage of the system. Have you had any challenges with localization, such as languages or accents or anything like that? I mean, as some of our firms grow and grow into more of a global community overall, I'm sure we're going to be running into issues with different languages and accents and ways of asking questions, which kind of touched on a little bit. But how have you dealt with some of these localization issues?
So we are entirely reliant on the platform we've selected for language recognition. For example, we are using on our mobile version, if you're running or using an iPhone, you are using Apple speech recognition. If you're using an Android-based phone, you're using Google's speech recognition on that device. That device is what converts my speech into text. It's the text that goes to the Google Dialogflow service, and that's when the natural language processing kicks in. So, and we also support the Google Home device and the Google Assistant, in addition to our own custom mobile apps. So again, we're reliant on the platform and the vendor for the speech part of it. Now, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and many others have amazing speech recognition, but it's not 100% perfect. My reading is that Google tends to be right up there at the top. So I'm confident we're delivering the best we can. Having said that, by and large, people are typing, and I think that's the nature of lawyers and law firms, and it's so much about the written word. Most people are using the Fenny Knowledge Bot from either their desktop or from our intranet. So it's very natural for them to type their questions. We do have people using it from their phones and Google Home devices, but I would say that's, sub 5% at this point. So the real challenge is not so much the spoken word, but the variations people can come up with, not to mention typos, right? Because if somebody puts in a typo and misspells corporate, there's a limit to how much interpretation the natural language processing can do there.
That's a really good point. And it's interesting that you've got so many different ways of accessing this information to kind of go along with the user's natural experience and how they like to interact with the program. Well, moving forward in the future state, how do you foresee Fenny advancing, such as implementing more elaborate workflows or something like that? I know that you mentioned implementing machine learning to kind of highlight inefficiencies and kind of tightening up those processes. But what other ways were you looking at advancing Fenny?
Well, all those. One area of AI that we as a firm we're just getting into, but really excited about, and many Iltons will have followed a robotic process automation or RPA that's getting a lot of press. we have just recently selected an RPA platform. And RPA, the way I think of it is it's kind of a marriage of screen scraping and workflow. You know, there's a lot of other things going on, of course, and it's more advanced. But it, for example, if our marketing group needs to go to Twitter and Facebook and other platforms, or maybe an aggregator, to download information about mentions of our firm that they then incorporate into a spreadsheet or a database for reporting about, you know, how the firm is getting recognized in the press. Today, that might take several days, a month or more. You can create a robot and train it to go to these various websites and write that data into a shared location. Now, where Fenny can come in is, instead of just having that scheduled, so the first Monday at 2 a.m. of each month, it kicks off, that's a perfectly valid thing to do. I could have Fenny front end that. So I could say, Fenny, go get the Facebook mentions data for this month and email it to me. And so Fenny can become essentially a front end to these roboticized processes. We're doing that already with more traditional workflows. So I mentioned the one about filling out transportation reimbursement form. But so that's a really exciting combination when you talk about things like machine learning or other types of AI. Fenny can actually just be a very natural front end to all of those things, essentially language enabling any of the traditional or new technologies that we're introducing at the firm. So it makes it very easily consumable by non-technical people, and they could do it from their phone, away from the office, or right at their desk.
Well, it sounds like the sky's the limit then, and basically, you know, you can do whatever you want to do with this technology, you know, and push it to the limits of your imagination to kind of figure out where to implement it in correcting your business processes and assisting with workload and in managing schedules and in having things just done for you, integrating with outside systems. It's truly amazing.
It really is. And just one of the quotes I read early on about natural language processing, and I think I have to give credit to, maybe this was on the Google site, but somebody pointed out that we humans have been communicating in language, in the spoken language, for 100,000 years, and maybe we've been writing for, you know, 10,000. Now, of course, natural language processing supports both, but as we progress, more and more people will want to speak to the systems that we as ILTans create and support. So I don't see knowledge bots as a wholesale replacement of what we've done before. There will still be intranets, there will still be more traditional database systems and filling in forms, but it's a really powerful addition to the legal technology toolkit to get information and processes out to our attorney, staff, and clients.
What a terrific way to end this interview. I really appreciate you taking the time out today to talk with us and to go over your experience and some of the trials and tribulations you've had and some of the truly amazing advancements you've made in the realm of knowledge bots, Mark. Thank you so much.
It's been a true pleasure, Jack. Thank you.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.